You're not an expert if you've been invited to speak at the Ice Kinetic Conference. Because you probably work in the Premier League, you probably treated a famous person, you probably published an article in the BDSM, you probably have a big following in social media, you probably know of Mike Davidson, you probably have something to gain from the other person there. You're in the clique. I think you get my point here. So if you're any of the above, get off yourself, really.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Late Fitness Test. I'm your host, Del, and I'm joined once again by Ben Dinnery and Johnny Wilson. Ben, how are you doing, young man?
I'm very good, Del. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, all good. All good. Raring to go, mate. Raring to go. I haven't had any energy drinks, but I've had plenty of caffeine, so let's go.
That's good to hear, mate. That's good to hear. And good evening to you, Mr. Wilson.
Good evening, gents. Good evening, Ben. Good evening, Stel. How are you guys?
You know. I'm looking forward to the international break.
Less scribbling. Yeah, I bet you get more work after that because everyone's going to start pulling up with injuries, aren't they?
And like I said, you know, we've touched upon it before. They're a little bit more difficult to track, but, you know, they're not as time sensitive as the Premier League, you know, when everybody needs to know the here and now and this minute. So, you know, it's a little bit more relaxed and slow paced during the break.
There you go. Right, let's get started with injuries first. And we'll talk about Man United because Paul Pogba has got an ankle injury. Wan-Bissaka's got tonsillitis. Angel Gomez, who many United fans believe is the saviour, or should I say the social media fans. Diego Dalot's out. Luke Shaw. I mean, the list goes on. But can you give us an update on Paul Pogba? Will he be ready for the weekend?
That is a question that we don't really know the answer to at this moment in time. All we know that he won't be involved in the Europa League game. You know, there's a couple of facets to that and reasons why Ollie won't be playing him. First and foremost, you know, it was never lightly. You know, he's been managing an ankle problem now for the past couple of weeks since the Southampton game. In Thursday night's matches on AstroTurf. So Ollie said he wouldn't risk him on that. But he's had a couple of, you know, setbacks when he's been working his way through. And the latest one was against Arsenal. And he's been assessed, you know, by his treating his consultant, his specialist. And he said he needs to take a little bit of time out to let that ankle heal. Now, what we don't know, is it a little bit of time out in terms of, you know, a couple of days to recover ahead of this weekend's game against Newcastle? Or it might be something where, you know, Ollie's looking at the international break and thinking, you know, we'll hold him back from France. He can have 2 weeks clear and then he can maybe, you know, come back fully refreshed, hopefully in a better place in week 9.
Mm. And what about Wan-Bissaka? Is tonsillitis going to clear up, you reckon?
He's certainly in with a good shout, yes. I mean, his withdrawal from the squad against Arsenal was a late one. It flew under the radar for a lot of people. You know, he had been working with the squad, and when it was announced that he actually wasn't part of the group that met at the team's hotel, many, you know, speculated that was the ongoing back problem. So it wasn't until the Monday evening that we found out that was a touch of tonsillitis. Now, he was touch and go again for the Europa League, which suggests that it isn't too serious and he should be very close for Sunday.
Great stuff. Let's move across to Man City because Kevin De Bruyne has got another injury. I'm not sure if he'll be going to Barcelona to meet that miracle doctor again. But obviously, a lot of people are going to be worrying about him if they're going to put him in their dream team for the weekend. What do you reckon? Is he going to be fit for the weekend or...?
This was the one Pep had my pants pulled right down on this one. Mm-hmm. I actually commented on Saturday when he was withdrawn from the game that he looked in a little bit discomfort. I thought there was a problem there with the groin. However, post-match, he went through the mix zone. He said he was fine. And Pep came out on Monday afternoon. He said, no, all the players have trained on Sunday. No issues whatsoever. But I've got another session now. And sure enough, you know, Kevin was absent from group training on the Monday afternoon, and then the club released a statement late on Monday evening to say that he had it and indeed, you know, pulled up with a groin issue that was being assessed by the club. Now, after their Champions League game on the Tuesday, Pep come out and he said, you know, it isn't serious. Again, we're looking at a minor niggle. We're not sure about this weekend's match. Again, your own thoughts will be, they've got plenty of options, you know, City there. And given his injury problems that he's carried over from last season, then I don't see any reason why they would need to maybe risk him or rush him back in any way, shape or form. You know, if there are any doubts, just take him out of the matchday squad. Again, give him a couple of weeks to recover and we'll see him definitely 100% back in week 9, obviously, albeit without any setbacks.
Mm. Well, it looks like Arsenal are almost with a clean bill of health, but Brighton are facing Tottenham this weekend, I believe, and they've got a few players back, haven't they?
Yes, so good news for Arsenal fans. Story broke earlier this week that Kieran Tierney had suffered a setback in training. Fortunately, that is not the case. I've actually spoken to the club who confirmed that Unai Emery made the decision not to involve him at Old Trafford, purely to remain at London Colney and work on his fitness. Arsenal are hopeful of him, you know, possibly be involved in the Europa League. You know, it's very much a tactical decision to keep him out of the Premier League squad at the moment. And Unai Emery's actually requested that he doesn't join up with the Scotland national team during the break as well. So I think, you know, we could be seeing maybe Kieran Tierney in week 9 or possibly week 10.
Blimey, that's the longest anticipated debut in football history, I guess.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like 8 weeks ago we were talking about him being the highest jumper at the club?
Yeah, so he joined, obviously, he came at the very back end of the summer transfer window. There was a lot of speculation. When he, you know, just before signing for Arsenal, Neil Lennon had come out and he said he was probably 7 to 10 days away from a first team return for Celtic. All of a sudden, he walks through the door down at London Colony at the Emirates, and unfortunately, it's going to be October. And then they started releasing stuff on social media, and one of the things that the media honed in on was this standing, you know, vertical jump test, of which he broke the club record. And I think we had the discussion along the lines of, well, you know, if he's producing those kinds of stats and he's doing those types of things, you know, that doesn't suggest or indicate that, you know, he's too far away. But, you know, he's been managed. He has been involved with the under-23s. He got a little bit of a run out in the Carabao Cup as well. I think that was a 77-minute job. You know, and fans and supporters are thinking that he's going to make that instant step up to the Premier League. But if we look at how Arsenal have maybe handled Rob Holden, I think it was 7 weeks between him playing his first minutes for the under-23s and then coming on at Old Trafford and playing in the Premier League. So, you know, they're binding their time. They're maybe, you know, learning from maybe mistakes which have been made in the past. And the same with Bellerin. You know, he's another one that the guys are working with very closely. He's being managed very carefully. So, you know, he certainly won't be thrown back in at the deep end and risk any kind of recurrence or setback.
Great stuff. And what about Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton's been a strange one. They've suffered a lot of injuries this season, which is quite unusual for them. That certainly wasn't the case under Chris Hughton. And a couple of their big players over the last couple of seasons, you know, Solly March, he's been a very influential player for them in attacking-wise in recent season. Now, he's been carrying a hamstring problem, and it's hopeful that Solly could maybe return this weekend. However, Shane Duffy, he's pulled a calf. He's got a calf problem, and he's definitely ruled out of that one. You know, it could be, you know, several weeks before he's back in first team contention, which isn't great news for Brighton. And up front, you know, Brighton have been lacking a few goals recently. And Leandro Trossard, you know, he'll be, you know, shouldering a lot of responsibility for that. But he was actually injured on international duty with Belgium, picked up a groin injury in training. Now, it was hoped that, you know, he could maybe return before this international break. However, you know, I would suggest, you know, even if he does manage to recover, any involvement is it will probably come from the bench.
Great stuff. And before we move on, Ben, any news on Theo Walcott? Because he went off injured at the weekend with a very bad head injury, suffered against Man City. And perhaps Johnny can chime in with his views on this, because I know, obviously, head injuries is a big thing now. We saw in the past Peter Cech wearing a helmet, or what was it? I don't know what he was wearing, a head guard of some sort. And you see it in the NFL, because I know that the American sports out there, they're very hot on these kind of injuries. Any news on Theo Walcott? And Johnny, what can you tell us about head injuries, or if you've experienced any footballers that have had similar issues?
Yeah, I mean, so just give you a quick update on the situation with Walcott. And for those who maybe didn't see the game live or haven't really heard about it, you know, Walcott was handed his first Premier League start of the season, which was almost ended probably within the first 4 minutes. He caught a driven ball flush in the head from Raheem Sterling. And it was clear that he was knocked unconscious. You know, the medical team at Everton took, you know, they followed the protocol. They were taking absolutely no chances. And he was stretched off and he was taken straight to hospital. Now, the good news for, you know, from his perspective, he was actually cleared of anything sort of serious. And he returned back to Goodison Park just before the end of the game. So he actually, you know, he rejoined the squad within 90 minutes. And Marco Silva, you know, it's basically as part of his post-match update, said that he would be going home and he would spend a few days just relaxing, just chilling, getting away from it all, and he would maybe look to, you know, bring him back down in the Fitch form towards the end of the week.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it isn't too serious. But, Johnny, what can you tell us about CTE injuries, mate?
Well, so we're at the beginning of our knowledge, really, on head injuries and concussion in particular. So the guidelines are being updated and pushed forward every 4 years. So there's a consensus where a group of specialists, experts, whatever you want to call them, people who have an interest in head injuries will get together and they will come up with a set of guidelines on how best to manage concussion. So guidelines aren't mandate, and they're, you know, it's the best practice that we've got at this current moment in time. But there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to how best to, number one, assess concussion, number two, manage concussion, and then number three, there's these magic numbers. So at day six, if you're, you know, if you've gone through your graded exercise program, you're magically cleared to play on the following Saturday, which is a very kind of, you know, that's a fortuitous number, isn't it, really? So the one thing that differs for concussion injuries in, let's say, in contrast to a musculoskeletal injury such as a hamstring injury or an ankle injury, the decision on whether a player can continue or not on the field of play or in training is taken away from the player. And then that is deemed to be the responsibility of the person who's taken charge of that session. Now, that doesn't always have to be the physio. That might be the referee. That might be the coach. That might be the parent who's in charge of it. That might be you and the Sunday league team. You know, if you're assuming responsibility for medical care, if you've got the sponge and the bag and so on and so forth, and if one of your players, you know, goes up for a, you know, gets a knock to his head, goes down, and you're kind of not sure whether this guy is concussed or not, then you've got to assume he is concussed, that he hasn't got the mental faculty to give you the right information, and therefore he needs to be removed and he needs to go for onward assessment. So a definitive diagnosis can't be made on the side of the pitch. So as the clinician on the side of the pitch can't say, yes, you have or you don't have concussion. It needs further investigation, and in a lot of situations that calls for a CT scan. Now, we do have questions that we ask. We do a SCAT assessment on the side of the on the pitch when a player goes down with a head injury. So you go there, you'll assess the situation, the environment, you make sure everything is okay. You'll what you will want to look for any neck injury. So if the player has a neck injury, then he's automatically, you know, if he's tender over his C-spine, over his spinous process, over the bony part of his neck, then he's going to be automatically ruled out. But let's say he doesn't have a neck injury, then you'll ask him some questions which are based on his short memory and his long-term memory. You look at his behavior, is he acting normally, and so on and so forth. So you can see that this is all kind of common sense stuff, isn't it? There's no definitive science on this. And my issue is that people go out and they throw about these research articles and these guidelines like they are the Bible. Not that I'm religious or anything like that, but, you know, they need to be very careful how they interpret this, because I have seen countless situations where, you know, it's far from best practice, and guidelines are guidelines.
This is one of the really, really grey areas of the game and the sport. Just last Saturday, we had another example where Aston Villa striker Wesley, down on the ground, players are concerned, flag the physio, not moving. I think they were worried at one stage that he may have swallowed his tongue. There's
another thing that never happens.
You're right. So they were worried he was down. The physios came on. He was being treated. For all intents and purposes, he was certainly concussed. He would be taken from the pitch. However, it later transpired that they made that assessment and he wasn't. And the manager, Dean Smith, came out and said as much after the game. Now, you know, is it the Football Association, you know, if in doubt, sit them out, mantra that they like to go with? We seen it with Fabian Shaw when he was playing for Switzerland. He was actually knocked unconscious. He was out for a number of seconds. Came around, you know, had a little bit of the old smelling salts, and then continued and played the whole 90 minutes. I see this protocol, but I don't see anybody enforcing it. And I don't see any, you know, for those that don't adhere to those rules, I don't see anybody being penalised or being flagged or being... It's
very timely, because the UEFA yesterday put out a new campaign and they call it the 3 R's. And it's to remember concussion. So it's recognise, report and remove. So they've done like a little video that they want to put out. And so it's probably worth sharing that with regards to concussion. But just on one of the things that you brought up there, Ben, if you do actually want to occlude somebody's airway, i.e., you know, that would be, let's say, swallow one's tongue, which doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
So the tongue occludes the airway, because take them from a sideline position or when they're lying in their front and roll them onto their back, and that's the best way to get someone to, using inverted commas here, to swallow one's tongue or to occlude one's airway. And that's the best way to give them a cardiac arrest, to give them a heart attack. That's how stupid it is when you see players, trying to put their hand in the mouth of another player. Can you imagine if they were in some type of shock and then they were to bite down on that guy's hand? Can you imagine if they did roll that player onto the back and all of a sudden the airway fell to the tongue fell to the back of the throat and occluded the airway? You're potentially inducing a cardiac arrest into a young person. Stand back, leave him alone, don't touch him, wait for somebody who's qualified to come on and to assess. And if somebody is like got that tonic, it's called tonic posturing, when their hands, if you've ever seen anybody knocked out in boxing or in rugby or in soccer, their hands kind of go into a clenched kind of position and they've involuntary move. And then, you know, that's called tonic posturing. That guy's out. That guy's had a central nervous system insult, and therefore that is removal of play. But I've seen it where, you know, players are acting the hero and then And in the match afterwards, or in the commentary afterwards, the manager is like, go on, and it was great, you know, that the players were there and tried to save his life. Fuck off. What do you know about anything in that situation? Mm. You know, I've seen it a few times where I've had to sit down the manager and then sit down all the players and go through an education session and say, look, do you know what? If there's a medical emergency on the pitch, I'll deal with it. You know, if you need to flag me on, I'll come on. Just leave him alone. Don't touch him. If there is a head injury, and if I am suspecting a C-spine fracture, I don't want you to actually give him the C-spine fracture by moving him. I want to immobilise the neck so that there's no further damage done there. So it's a funny one, like, do you know what I mean, regards to how people deal with it. And you need, yeah, it's, yeah, because there's a lot more going on there.
Yeah, and what would your thoughts be on the proposals of the possible introduction of a temporary substitution while players are assessed on the sidelines and given a 10-minute time frame? You know, is that long enough? Is that something which you think would benefit, or are you still of the mind, you know, if in doubt, pull them out regardless?
Well, the 10 minutes is a help, right? Because, you know, making those type of decisions is very, very difficult, you know. And you're under a lot of pressure, and this shouldn't matter, but where everybody's human being, but the status of the player, the time of the match, the importance of the game, I know none of this matters. I know none of this matters, right? However, this is real-life scenarios. So that 10-minute breather, that window of opportunity to assess someone, you know what, he's not himself. That's as possibly as close as you'll get to saying somebody's concussed or not. He's just not himself. Well, then, if he's just not himself, right, whether he is or he isn't concussed, you know, don't put him back on. But that decision, I'm trying to buy time with referees all the time. Like, you know, it's a lot easier now because I just turn around to the referee and I go, it's a head injury. And the referee knows that, you know, you're allowed the time you need at that situation. You know, or in the situation where a guy is concussed, he's combative and he's, you know, wanting to play on and I think he's concussed and the game is going on, I'll go to the referee and get the referee to stop the game. So I won't tackle the player head on. Stuff like that, you know, it's you know, where you're kind of going, look, ref, you're going to stop this game. He's concussed. He's not compliant. He's, you know, this guy, I've recognised that, you know, and you're running out and the game is going on. And you're saying to the referee, stop the game. This guy is concussed. Potentially concussed.
Great stuff. Fantastic. Well, while you're on fire at the moment, Johnny, talk to us about this blog you've written named The Experts Football Physio Sports Scientist, Nothing More Than a Charlatan.
Yeah, strong start, isn't it? Well, yeah. What would you like to know?
Well, I'm just interested to hear your thoughts behind it. I mean, obviously, we spoke about expert physios a couple of weeks ago, and you put up a post on LinkedIn and a few people got in touch and they gave their thoughts. What was the thought process behind it?
Yeah, because I hear this bandied about a lot. You know, we obviously talked about the miracle doctor, and now there's the miracle man who's going possibly from Celtic to Manchester United. And, you know, expert physios and S&C coaches and sports scientists, and they are littered in social media. You know, the kind of guys that you can't put up a post and they are on you straight away. The forum police, the people who've got an opinion on everything. You write something and then all of a sudden they've worked with somebody better or they've had it. You know, I just fed up of it. So I wrote a piece on it, you know, and like in the blog, you know, it's fairly hard hitting blog. And I define, you know, what is not an expert. So, I don't want to give too much away from the blog, but, you know, let's take it for example. Like, let's on this podcast dispel some of the myths. you are not an expert because just because you work in the Premier League, you're not an expert. You've treated or worked with a famous person, you're still not an expert. You've got a huge following on social media like Ben Dinry, still doesn't qualify you to be an expert. You're published in a scientific journal. Nah, you're not an expert. You're part of the clique, the cool gang, or the mafia, as I like to call you. And needless to say, I was never in the cool gang anyway. You're not an expert. You're a social climber. And what I mean by that is you're the kind of person who talks to someone because you can gain something off that person. And if you can't gain anything off that person, you don't chat to them because they're not going to improve your outcome. You're not an expert. You're not an expert because you always voice your opinion on social media about the way you do it is the only way to do it because you work at such and such a club. I'm sick and tired of listening to you. Don't bother commenting on my stuff because I never put up I'm an expert. I never tell anyone you should or must. I put up just ideas and other ways and my lens and I like to share. You're not an expert if you've been invited to speak at the Ice Kinetic Conference because you probably work in the Premier League. You probably treated a famous person. You probably published an article in the BDSM. You probably have a big following in social media. You probably know Mike Davison. You probably have something to gain from the other person there. You're in the clique. I think you get my point here. So if you're any of the above, get off yourself, really. Because they might be desirable to some people in sport and exercise medicine, but they're not prerequisites of what constitutes being assigned the expert tag. So for me, there are two types of practitioners in professional football that are the support staff. So whether you're a physio, a sports scientist, an S&C coach, a performance coach, I don't care what you're called. You're either a learner or you're a charlatan, but you're not an expert. And if you think you're an expert, you're delusional. And that's what makes you a charlatan. So you can be your social media bully. You can be a published author. You can hide behind smoke and mirrors, behind badges and athletes, behind journals and articles. But when it does come down to the aspect of that uncertainty, the uncertainty of what you've done to help that player return to play or training following your institution, your program, any of the above outcomes, those desirable outcomes, they're not going to mean fuck all to you when it comes to it. What will mean an awful lot is, were you a good listener? Are you a reflective practitioner? Have you enough experience? Have you seen the good, the bad, the ugly, when it goes right, when it goes wrong? Have you got that intuitive hunch? Steve Jobs says, don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your inner voice. Well, that inner voice takes a long time to kind of come as well. And then do you reflect on your reflection? So, is it correct to assume that someone is an expert in the field of sport and exercise medicine just because they work, who they work for or who they know or what they've written? Well, in my opinion, if that's what you're defining as an expert, you may as well call them a bureaucratic expert. And nothing more than that. Because they're the cowards that hide behind the athletes. So they piggyback on the success of the badge of the club or the success of the athlete. He won a World Cup. He's the world champion of this. She done this. He done that. Well, I was his he's or her S&C coach. I was a sports scientist. I was the physio. It's not because of you, mate. And when it comes down to it, the expert, if you want to go down that route, is the athlete. And that's reflected in their pay package, by the way. And it's also reflected in the pay package and the support staff, the sports scientist, the physio, the S&C coach. You don't get the same money as they do because you're not that expert. Now, there are very good clinicians out there who work in the Premier League, who work in the Championship, who work in League Two, who work in League One, is one better than the other because of the status of the league that they're in, or the colour of the badge, or the player that they've worked at? Is that the type of person that you want to be treating your son or daughter or a player on your fantasy league team? Or do you want somebody who's invested in their own skill set, in their own qualities as a person, in the person that, like, took time to listen to you, took time to understand, took time, made their job their passion? There's a big difference here. And, you know, there are plenty of people out there who don't have a social media account and are excellent practitioners. There are plenty out there who don't work in elite or professional sport. And I will go to them as part of my mentorship. So, you know, this headliners by the Sun, the Miracle Man from Celtic, Tim Williams is a very good physio, excellent physio. I'm sure he doesn't want that label of the Miracle Man either. But it's about time, you know, there was a little bit of a reality check here, you know? The nonsense that goes around. I mean, like, you know, a guy down at Bournemouth, a physio at Bournemouth, thinks he's an expert at ACL because he was part of a writing group and then, you know, it's just nonsense. It's crazy. And if you're listening, you know who you are. Happy to call you. Come on the podcast. We'll have a proper discussion, man to man.
Do you know what? Every time you do this, it just reminds me of one scene. One scene in Scarface. Shall I play it?
Go on, then.
All right. I found it. 1 minute.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what'll I make you? Good? You're not good. You just know how to hide. How to lie. Me, I don't have that problem. Me, I always tell the truth. Even when I lie. So say goodnight to the bad guy. Come on. The last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you.
Anyway, right, listen, I speak about all this in depth in the blog, right? And I mean every single word of it. Little bit red raw and hot with emotion, but that's okay because that's the type of person I am.
I mean, so Johnny, who is the blog aimed at? I mean, is this for you? Is this just, you know, giving you an opportunity to vent your spleen? Or, you know, are you thinking of the wider audience? And are you wanting to debunk the myths? Like, you know, who are you putting this out there for?
Well, do you know what? That's a very good question, right? Because you should always write with the listener in mind. And I actually wrote with a lot of feeling, right? And so it's out there for newly qualified sports scientists, physios, doctors, anybody who wants to get into professional football and who is starstruck and in awe because they see this guy on television and he's working with whatever club in the Premier League or Championship and I want to be that person. And then they assume that this person is an expert. It's for these people to kind of go, come here, catch yourself on. They're not what you think they are. And just because they're speaking in a conference, they're not what you think they are. You know, let's start looking at real qualities for real people rather than that association, expertism by association. you associate them as an expert because of who they work with. It's for everyone. It's to go, right, listen, it's the support staff. You can be very good as a support staff, and you can make a name for yourself, and you can make your way in this world. But don't be delusional. Don't be a charlatan. Don't make out you're something you're not because of behind the back. Yes, if you play for Manchester United, you're probably a very good footballer, or Arsenal, or Liverpool, or whoever they are, right? You had to do... Your recruitment process to get there was huge. The recruitment process for the physio, or the S&C coach, or the sports scientist is not the same. There are turns and twists, good luck and bad luck, huge amount of confounding factors why we all end up where we end up in life. You might have been at the right time, at the right place, which is probably the case for mostly everything in this world, because it's a haphazard way of everything. You do the best you can to stay on your own little track, but you never know when you're going to take a detour, because that's just life, my friend. So, you know, get over yourself.
Well, I'm going to put the popcorn away now. It's away.
I think you make a very valid point. I think it's easy to assume, that by association, back in the day, I always assumed, the teams, the backroom staff at those Premier League clubs were infinitely better than those at Championship level and League One level and League Two, when, quite those clubs who are maybe not as well-resourced, it's quite the opposite. The staff down there are required to do a lot more, and therefore they have the opportunity to hone their skills, and they're a lot more sort of diverse in what they do with the players.
It's like you see these guys on social media, you see them on Twitter, right? And they rely heavily and quote hugely on social media platforms scientific theoretic knowledge, right? Nordic hamstrings reduce hamstring injuries by X amount. Proprioception work can reduce the risk of non-contact ACLs. It's what they fucking read. They've got no exposure to any of those injuries over a 10, 15 year period where they can actually go and really critique that with regards to their own experience. It's called acquisitional knowledge. They've acquired that knowledge from books and articles, not because of their real life practical experience.
Johnny, yeah? It's what the youngsters call clout chasing. You ever heard of that term?
No, I have not, and thank you for telling me. Could you explain that, please?
Well, what it is that people put out tweets with certain content just to get a rise out of people, just to get attention, or just to get credit for something that obviously isn't really worth anything, to be fair.
Well, it's the work they're putting out, they didn't even write the fucking stuff, but they put it out like they wrote it. Is it, again, like a person who's got professional craft knowledge, and what I mean by that is they have knowledge that they've gained from experience in their field. Now, according to the academics who aren't experts either, right? But they would say that that's gold standard for expert practice or the expert practitioner. But the thing is, honestly, nobody can define what an expert is. If you assume that an expert is because of who they work for or what they've written, like, come on, where else does that fly? Just can't do it. It's like, as in the case of I understand that sharing information and putting out the theoretical knowledge, scientific theoretical knowledge, of what we know at this present moment in time. And everything that we know at this present moment in time in the future will be refuted, will be replaced with a better theory, still not fact, still not truth.
And in your experience,
Wanya,
Johnny, sorry, you've obviously been, you know, involved in elite level sport for a great number of years. And is this something which become more prevalent, you know, with the emergence of social media, you know, maybe over the last sort of 5, 7, 10 years? Or do you think there's always been an underlying current there of practitioners who are maybe hiding behind the badge?
That's always been there, yeah. It's just been highlighted more and more now. With there's more of a platform now. There's more of an exposure now for these guys, you know, who consider themselves expert. And some of the stuff they write, oh my God. Do you know, like, my son's not 7 yet, but if he wrote like that, I'd be like, come here, let's have a chat. You know, but no, this has always been about, you know, the experts, the specialists, the, you know, the go-to guys. You know, if you come to me, you're probably leaving up more questions. You're going to get an honest appraisal. You're going to get, you know, an assessment from somebody who is going, do you know what? This is the first time you're standing in front of me, so we're going to carry out our own research. We're going to do research, action, research. We're going to reflect in practice. So we're going to reflect in the assessment, and then we're going to reflect on the assessment, on the situation, on the scenario. When a player clutches his hamstring in, you know, 15 minutes into a game and goes down like he's been shot, and you're running onto the pitch, and players are screaming and hollering, and oh my God, they're trying to roll him into the recovery position. You're thinking, you know, you've got your defib in one hand and your medical bag in the other hand. Come on. Come on. You know, it's about time that, you know, you call it as it is. You call it, you either take the viewpoint of being a learner, and that you've experienced some stuff along the way, some good stuff, some bad stuff, some stuff that, you know, you were lucky with, you were unlucky with, but all the stuff that you learned from, and you've got way more learning to do. Because the moment you think you're an expert, you're on the way down. You're delusional. You're a clown. And if you think because you work in academia, you work in a university, and you go round and round in circles because you can't make decisions in a university, you're not an expert either. Yes, I'm talking to you. You're not an expert. You might be pretty good at writing, but it takes more than that. I don't know what it takes, because you can't define what an expert is, but, you know, you can define what a good person is. Somebody who's not hiding behind X, Y, and Z. Somebody who's a good listener. Somebody who's a reflective person. Somebody who thinks about their thoughts. Somebody who thinks about their actions. They think about their actions so that they can serve to provide a better action for the patient the next time, for the athlete the next time, so that the next athlete has a better experience. So that you bridge what's called the theory-practice gap. You read, you learn, you implement in there, you research, action, research. You carry out your own real research on every single athlete, every player you work with, every patient you work with, every interaction you have. How did that go? It doesn't matter if the other person does or doesn't. All it does matter is you do. But I don't want anyone to define me on who I was with and who I wasn't with. And I wasn't a practitioner in the Premier League. Never want to be. Too many silos. I was never going to have any opportunity to be a real part of the team, to be involved in load management, to be involved in writing pre-seasons, to putting out the kit, to collecting the kit, to everything. There was nothing that I wanted in the Premier League. Nothing. There was no badge. I wasn't chasing any badge. I'm not chasing any badge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking through the blog, Johnny, and I've also looked through. You touched upon this through your social media channel, and the response from and the replies within that have been fairly positive. I mean, there's a lot of you in this. You know, it's obviously something that you feel very strongly about, quite passionate about. But, you know, once it goes live and the blog is out there, you know, how do you think that's going to be received, you know, generally within the community, within the, you know, the medical community? Do you think they're going to be supportive, or, you know, are there a few home truths, or are they going to be thinking, you know, who the hell does Johnny Wilson think he is?
The lifelong learners will look at it and they won't accept or refute it. They will realise that this is just another person giving their lens, giving their opinion, not a fact, that this is the way they see it. The charlatans, the ones that are hiding, they'll take offence to this for sure. They'll think, who is this Johnny Wilson? They'll be the type of people who want to be protective over their title. They rule by titles. They rule by the badge. They rule by the club they're at. Their opinion only matters because of the club they're at. You take that, you strip that away from them. You strip that identity away from them. A loss of identity. Nothing left. Nothing. Because they are in an abysmal hole. I left football on my terms. And yes, I had a loss of identity as well. I felt that. I felt an absolute hole. I thought to myself, do you know what? Are people going to listen to me now the same way that they listen to me? Because they used to think there was a perceivement that I knew what I was doing because I worked in a football club. And the reality was that there were some people who haven't been in touch with me. The social climbers. And then there are some people who have remained good friends, good colleagues. And then they obviously assumed or they proportioned more weight to me as a person than to, you know, who I worked with or worked for. And do you know what? To the ones that are gone by the wayside, thank God. And to the ones who think, who is this Johnny Wilson? All that, I don't want to talk to you. Don't bother commenting on it. Don't bother sending a reply on social media. Don't bother reading the fucking thing. Because it's going to be no good for you anyway. But for those who want to learn and who want to kind of, you know, become the best person they can be, the best practitioner they can be, the best sports scientist they can be, the best physio they can be, the best S&C coach they can be in football, and do it for the right reasons, for them as a person, to help other people. I never did become a physio in professional football because it was the next best thing to being a player. Fuck that. I did it because it was the best thing that I ever wanted to do. I wasn't following somebody else's North Star. It was my North Star. And it wasn't that I had to be in a Premier League club because I needed people to think that, what division are Notts County in? What division are Scunthorpe in? What division are Halifax Town, Chesterfield, whoever? Oh, yeah, they're in this division. Oh, so they're not in the Premier League. Oh, you can't be very good. Yeah. I must be terrible, yeah. Because I worked in the lower leagues. Shows how much you know. And shows how, you know, it's more of a reflection on them than it is on me. So, you know, I'm obviously very, very emotional about this, as you would say. Very, very, very emotional. But, you know, I'm telling the truth. I've always told the truth. Like I said in the blog as well, you know, I'm not one of the popular guys. I don't want to be. I don't want to be. I've had Twitter messages from heads of medicines in Premier League clubs. Oh, how could you say this in a tweet? I look back at the tweet and I go, there's nothing wrong with the tweet. You need to get over yourself. I won't mention who it is on because they'll probably listen to the podcast. Because I've got more respect for them. But they're delusional. For sure. So read the blog for what it is, an honest, open, truthful account of my thoughts and my opinion. No truisms. No facts, no shoulds, no musts. It's just how I see it through my lens.
Where can we find the blog, Johnny?
Benji?
The blog will be going out live on the Premier Injuries website. We push it through social media channels, through Twitter, and it'll go out through Premier Injuries, through Bent Injury, and also through Physio Room. So you'll not be able to get away from from the blog, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how people interpret that and how they respond. It's a really good read. Like I say, it strips everything back. Johnny's passion shines through, and you can't help.
You're smiling now.
It's and like you say, it is bound to irk a few people, but it's like you said, Johnny, it's those type of people that, are really sort of getting you back up and who made to, the Charlotte
world. So I'm going to answer your question then, right? The blog is aimed at the charlatans.
So you mean to tell me that it hasn't actually been punished yet? So you've given us such a massive tease. I've dated a stripper like you.
What, midget like in grey?
No, a bit taller.
Peter Degarator.
Bit taller. No names mentioned. She might be listening. I doubt it. Anyway. Right,
Roxy.
Her indoors.
If I speak, I'll be in big trouble. Right, let's move on swiftly. Forest Green Rovers, they have gone 100% vegan, although I'm not sure that's true because the football boots are made out of leather, so how can they be vegan?
Yeah, I mean, this follows on from a BBC documentary which has just been released over the past week, going down to Forest Green Rovers, who've just become, they've just won the accolade of being the greenest football club in the world. And it's headed up by Jermaine Janus, and it's all about football going vegan. And basically, can professional sports people, such levels of performance on a plant-based diet, and that links in with their vegan football pitch and their vegan menu for support as, all the way down to being a carbon neutral. Their owner, I think it's the chairman, Dale Vince. He's vegan. He's implemented a lot of changes during his tenure at the club. I think, from 2010, he banned red meat. And they say that, in terms of the improvements for player performance through rest and recovery, they've seen reduced injury incidents. We've seen reduced time spent in the treatment room. Players are playing with more energy. They're playing better. And they're better prepared psychologically for that. And, is it just a flippant off-the-cuff remark? Or is there science behind this to show, why plant-based diets offer elite-level sportsmen people?
Right. Well, number one, now I'm going to get in trouble with everybody.
we're doing one this week.
Right. Yeah. So, number one, any of those things that they've just said, very difficult to prove because you've got a turnover in players. How are they monitoring sleep? The stuff that they're saying there is just you just can't prove any of that stuff. Number one. Number two, there are a lot of ultra athletes who do go on plant-based diets. So it's all the kind of, it's the rave now, And there's a lot of things that are in the benefit there. So there's a lot of anti-inflammatory aspects to a plant-based diet. We were, when we first started out as humans, flexitarians. So a flexitarian is a person who, you're kind of feeding on the berries and plants and anything you can get hold of. And then every 10 days or so, you might come across or you might be able to kill some animal for some meat. So, we're kind of innately DNA'd that way anyway. After they leave the club and they've had their lunch there, They're probably in fucking McDonald's.
Yes. Drive-through, right? Mate. Drive-through. Yeah. Yes.
They're going through the drive-through, bro. they're having medium rare. I mean, I said to somebody the other day, I said, well, I just found out my kid is definitely posher than me. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, well, I went into my local restaurant and I ordered a cheeseburger. And my lad was nearly 7. He ordered a steak medium well. I looked at him like I was going, he'll have a kid's cheeseburger.
Hey, kids menu.
Kids menu. Steak medium well. What's that? What is that? Like, I just looked at him in disbelief. I was like, one, you know, what? But yeah, anyway, still I digress flick. There. I unless you get people to buy in 24/7 into a culture change, not just a nutritional change, a culture change. And then you're going to put out these facts that they're sleeping better, they're training better, there's less injuries. So you're monitoring these guys 24/7. None of these guys have any meat at all during the week at home. You've now taken away their freedom as well. Now, remember, this is not a Premier League club, so they're not getting an awful lot of money in comparison. And you're saying, right, guys, none of you are allowed. Your freedom to eat meat is gone. I mean, that's just, it's nonsense, isn't it? Like, think about it. How plausible is that?
Well, I don't know. Just think about it.
I'm
Cypriot, so you know, meat is in our religion. Like, you have to eat meat. There's two ways about it.
And you've got a full head of hair.
That's, well, almost. I'm hairy other places, but.
Toes and fingers.
The Hobbit.
Is that why you Richard Keys?
Del the Hobbit.
You give me a reputation now.
Yeah, come on. I mean, look, I'm sure they're doing a great job there. I love the idea that they're going vegan. I think it's fantastic. I love Forest Green. I think it's one of the best football clubs that I've ever had the privilege of being there and working. You know, it's just phenomenal. The whole story, little village up on top of the hill, trying to get the bus up there. Oh, it's brilliant. I loved it. I loved every moment. Anytime we used to get to go to Forest Green Rovers, it was just phenomenal. And the guys there are great as well. But come on, talk about stretching the truth. We talked about Mary Poppins there the other week. This is kind of Santa Claus, right? You know, we're coming towards Christmas here, like Halloween, like, come on. You know, you don't have 24/7, you know, monitoring on these guys. What are these guys having for breakfast? And, you know, and then how are they measuring all this stuff? I'd love to know that, because I tell you what, I'd need a suite of sports scientists.
Avocado and toast.
Very nice, by the way.
Yep.
Would I throw a couple of slices of bacon on that, a couple of rashers on that, and I'd be a bit of mushrooms.
That's it. That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Give me a greasy spoon anyway. Anyway, let's move on to United, because apparently they're after a new physio, a miracle physio from Celtic. Ben, shed some light on this, please.
Yeah, so we've had, obviously, we've touched upon this in previous podcasts. You know, there seems to be a media story which is beginning to gain a little bit of traction, that United Chiefs are unhappy with the number of non-contact injuries that are being suffered at the club. And so this guy from Celtic, this Tim Williamson, is being targeted and touted to be brought in as head of medicine. Now, I've had a look at the data, you know, just to see if it sort of backs up, you know, these stories that are going out the press. And, you know, it transpires that things really aren't that great down there at United. I've had a look at, you know, during Ollie's tenure at the club, there's been 38 competitive games. I stayed away, you know, the non-competitive matches through the summer. And then the 38 games that he's actually been involved in, United have suffered 54 injuries. And 40% of those, or almost 40% of those, are all soft tissue related, and half relates specifically to the hamstring. Now, just to give you a little bit of context in that, it comes about that United are suffering an injury for one in every 63 minutes played on the pitch. Now, if we look back at sort of 2017-18, at the time, Crystal Palace had the worst record in the Premier League, and they were suffering an injury one in every 95 minutes, you know, so it's at least 50% longer. And then 2018-19, United actually had the worst record overall, which was one in every 80 minutes, but that did obviously include a chunk of Jose Mourinho's time at the club, and that since went down under Ollie. So, you know, the data that we collect, you know, does indicate that there is an issue there. You know, we've seen a few muscular problems this season. You know, we've got Anthony Martial that's still out there. We've got Luke Shaw. I mean, a couple of the main culprits, if we look, you know, drill down beneath the actual figures themselves, and three of those that I think, you know, struck me is we had players like Antonio Valencia, who were coming off the back of quite a lengthy spell out with a calf problem, spent 79 days out, played one game, and in that game suffered another setback which would put him out for over 7 weeks. We've seen a very similar situation with Jesse Lingard, hamstring. He spent nearly 2 weeks out, first game back, suffers another setback, and there's 3 weeks. Ander Herrera, now he had an ongoing hamstring problem, and he spent, you know, within the space of a 7 week period, you know, 6 of those weeks were spent on the sidelines. He kept on coming back and suffering setbacks. So, you know, the situation hasn't been great. And so it seems that, you know, Ollie's, you know, maybe getting feedback from the players, or he's looking at what's happening and he's thinking, you know, how can we address this? What do we need to do to stop this happening? And, you know, we've talked about his experience or lack of and maybe dealing with these kinds of situations before. You know, I really don't know what his the situation was like from back when he was at Mulder, but, you know, the data didn't, when he was at Cardiff City, you know, they certainly weren't suffering anywhere near these types of problems with his team there. So, you know, this could be like the first time that almost they've come across this crisis, as it were, and he's doing maybe what he thinks is best. You know, he's apportioning all the blame to the medical team, to the physio, who's maybe been used as a bit of a scapegoat here, and saying, right, well, actually, if we're having a lot of injuries here, we want to maybe get rid of you, and we need to bring in somebody else, which, as we all know, you know, is it going to be the answer?
Well, do you know what? I'm just going to say this as a United fan. Perhaps if the club brought in replacements for the players that they sold or got rid of, then they wouldn't have this problem, would they? The squad is down to its bare bones. People are falling like flies. You sell Lukaku, you get rid of Sanchez, and you're left with Rashford. Well, what do you want me to say?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you do have me in there as well.
Oh, yeah, an 18-year-old. Yeah, just yeah, run him into the ground as well, you know.
But for me, you know, I mean, I don't know a great deal about this miracle guy, who the media have dubbed, and I don't know where this moniker's came from. I don't know, you know, what he's done in his past to deserve this, or whether it's just, you know, another sensationalised strapline used, you know, to sell papers. But, you know, obviously that he's well experienced and he's well respected within his field. But I just think there's a, you know, there are other influencing factors involved, and it really bugs me that, you know, again, it's that assumption that, you know, you have a player injured or you have a large number of injuries in a club, and it instantly falls on the toes of the medical team. Well, I'm sorry, that just isn't the case.
Johnny, what's your take on this? Because I know this fella has had two spells at Celtic. He was a physio for the Scotland national team. He spent a bit of time at Spurs, at Birmingham, at Leeds. It looks like, I'm not going to say he's an expert, but it looks like he's got a fair bit of experience at the top level. Bit of an appointment out of the blue if it happens.
Well, if that's what they're going with, then the obvious conclusion from somebody who's speculating, so the speculative conclusion here is that the players and the manager have lost confidence in the physio because of recurrences of injuries, and therefore the players have said, you know, look, you know, we think we need another physio here, and hence why they've gone out on a recruitment drive. That's the speculative conclusion. Now, it's a very shallow way to kind of, you know, bring in someone, whether it, regardless of who that person is, so regardless of whether it's the miracle man or whoever it is, unless the guy coming in is in charge of recruitment, retention, release, load management, nutrition, sleep, games, training, what goes on in the coaching session itself, tactics, how they're going to play. I mean, one man is, like, again, look at the naivety here. If it's part of a bigger plan, a bigger strategy, and you're getting all your ducks lined up, then fair enough. But having an effect on injury incidents and to a lesser or greater degree injury occurrence, then, you know, it's not a one-man band here. Like, you know, this is a whole club, you know, responsibility here. This is, the ownership is on everybody. Like Ben said, that, you know, there's a small percentage of the players who own these injuries. 54 injuries, it sounds like a huge amount, doesn't it? But then when you break it down, you know, you trace it back to the source, I trace it back to recruitment. Then I'd look at my own coaching. I'd look at my, you know, as in, have we built the program within the training sessions which enables these guys to cater for anything that is thrown their way? So have they got the redundancy? Have they got the physiological and psychological traits to be able to handle, to cope with what is going to happen on a Saturday? And by the looks of it, no. Now, recurrences happen. So maybe the reconditioning philosophy needs to change as well. Maybe that needs to be looked at as well. Do you have to get rid of the guy that's there? I don't think so, because, you know, so again, look, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't going to give me a job after this either, but he's probably...
But it's just, you don't want to work in the Premier League anyway, so...
No, I don't anyway. So, you know, I don't, genuinely. But, you know, he's not going to have seen this before. He's in crisis. This is a crisis to him. This is catastrophic to him, you know, because he hasn't seen this before. I have. Seen it plenty of times. Got called into plenty of clubs. We've got 7 injuries at the moment. All right, okay, this is professional football. You're going to have to deal with this. I wouldn't be pointing the blame at one person here, but I'd be looking for solutions. And I'd be forward planning now. And I'd be looking at the product you've got on the pitch. And then what are the processes that you're implementing to ensure your product is fit for purpose. But it's a process. And if you're the size of Manchester United and you're pinning your hopes on a miracle man, this is no slight on Tim Williamson here. Again, I'm a stakeholder in the club. I'm a big financial backer of Manchester United. One of the biggest, if not the biggest club in the world. And I'm pinning my hopes of the saviour, the turning around of this injury crisis. I'm saying that rolling my eyes on one man. Surely I'm not the first person that's kind of looked at the other person beside me and kind of gone, that doesn't sound right to me. Surely we'd be looking at the process here. Surely we'd be looking at a bigger picture here. Surely we'd be looking at a scheme of work here. Surely we'd be looking at forward planning here. We're in a bit of a situation, all right. It's not a crisis, by the way. But we need to start thinking about, you know, bring in this guy. Yeah, absolutely, that's going to help with this. Bring in this person. Yeah, that's going to help with this. Because bricks and mortar will always be bricks and mortar. They don't make decisions. But the people around you will. So, and football is moving on.
I mean, do you also think that Ollie is potentially exacerbating the situation with regards to, you know, he's in the firing line? You know, United have got their on and off field problems at the moment. And for me, the Marcus Rashford return on Monday night was a prime example of that. You know, 8 days before, he picks up a groin-related injury, reported as long-term initially. Subsequent tests revealed, well, actually it wasn't as bad as we first thought. We hope to get him back before the international break, so game week 8, you know, heading into this weekend. And then all of a sudden he appears on the team sheet and starts on Monday night, just 8 days later. And for me, that was a case of, you know, we haven't replaced Lukaku, we haven't replaced Sanchez, you know, we've got Mason Greenwood there. Do I really want to be throwing a 17-year-old boy, you know, in at the deep end against Arsenal, one of our biggest rivals? It's a game we can't afford to lose, especially at home. You know what? I'm going to risk and I'm going to put Rashford back in there. You know, and I probably know he's maybe not 100%. There's maybe a high risk of recurrence there. But do you know what? I've got to go with that because, you know, if we were to lose and I was to put a weakened team out as such and there was a chance that Rashford could play, you know, it could cost us my job.
Right. So that's the academic spiel, yeah? So that's out of the way. Now, let's have a chat about what might have actually happened. Right? Player feels his groin. Think I've done my groin. Physio runs out. You're all right. I don't know. Can you carry on? I don't know. You're going to need to make a decision, son. Well, I'm feeling my groin. What are you telling me here? My groin is sore. Right? Are you able to play? I don't know. Physio now has to make a decision for the player, because the player is not very helpful in the situation. He's going to come off. Comes off. Player then afterwards feels here. Let's get some imaging. Go on the imaging. Plus or minus, wouldn't matter what the imaging says. Players like kind of going, oh, do you know what? Turns up the next day. Not an awful lot of experience in the game yet. Actually, doesn't feel too bad now. Well, the gaffer went and said it was, you know, X, Y, and Z yesterday. And now you're saying this. Do you know what? I think I'm okay. Or he comes in the next day. It's really bad. Comes in the day after. Do you know what? It's feeling really good now because he got the results of his scan. Oh, the scan said nothing's wrong with my groin. Yeah, actually, it's okay. Guy goes back to train. Everybody's looking around themselves. Is he taking a fucking piss here or what? Guy's trained Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Got to play him on the Monday because he doesn't know what he's doing at the moment. That's a real life scenario. Yeah. I'm not saying it happened in this situation, but I'm saying that I'm putting a lot of responsibility on the player here and educating the player here. And do you know what? Maybe 10 years ago, that player is not reporting that sensation. That sensation. I didn't say injury.
Well, you're talking about a footballer that is 21 years old. He recently signed a new contract on just under 200 grand a week. He hasn't been in the best of form. I don't think he even knows his best position. The manager doesn't know his best position. And yeah, he's devoid of confidence. So it wouldn't surprise me if what you just said, Johnny, actually happened. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And Karen.
Compare and contrast this with the NFL. 16 games. You miss 4 games, you miss quarter of the season. You miss quarter of the season, you're not getting another contract, son. You daren't. miss training games. Like, a high ankle sprain in the NFL is not a time-loss injury. In professional football, you could be looking anywhere between 6 and 12 weeks. In the NFL, it is not a time-loss injury. Same injury. You know, the amount of games and opportunities you have to miss in professional football. If you're talking about a schedule that's 70, 80 games, do you know what? I'm a high status player. I'm fairly confident I'll keep my position. I'm feeling that, you know what? The gaffer's going to play me next week anyway. I'm not going to take a chance. I'm a low status player. Just about getting my chance in the team. Got a little bit of a groin niggle. I'm not going to say anything about this. I'm going to ride this out. I'll take a couple of ibuprofen.
And maybe in 10 years' time, Ollie might handle that situation better and deal with the post-match interviews in a different way, as opposed to almost, you know, putting it out there and it coming back to bite him.
Well, he will do, because he'll be able to draw upon this experience if he's a lifelong learner, yeah. if he's a reflector, if he's a person who can use reflection in practice and on practice. At the moment, he can only reflect on his practice because he hasn't got any previous experience at this level to be able to compare and then make a decision in the moment. But I'm sure if he listened to this, he'd say, "Who the fuck is this guy?"
Well, I could tell you what Ollie's going to be in 10 years. Probably working for the Man United Foundation, talking how great the Glazers are. So yeah. Anyway, Don't get me started. I think I let Johnny with the rants. Leave him with that job. But you know.
Well, I like to think I'm more
the late fitness run.
that's the extra that's going to be on Patreon. $5 a month.
It's just $5.
Oh, blimey! Right, gents, is there anything else we'd like to discuss?
I think it's been a fairly comprehensive show. I'm more than happy with what we've covered this evening.
Yeah, and I hope everyone that's been listening has got what they paid for. Was there a question that was posted to Johnny on LinkedIn?
Yes, Sam Cleaver. We're at 2 hours and 5 minutes. Sam, I am going to address your question in depth next podcast because we didn't get a chance to do it tonight. But I am putting together a reply as we speak because I thought it was an excellent question. I'm just going to bring up the question so that I can kind of preview it for the next one. So Sam, who's he was asking about, like, see, he enjoys the show and so on and so forth. But in terms of some players being injured as much as they are, i.e. recurrence of injury, fatigue and soft tissue injuries where players don't feel confident, do you think on some occasions the manager, physio, doctor should take the decision out of the player's hands just for another week to give them one more week of training under their belt? Like Emerson at the weekend, play Alonso first, then bring him in on the last 15 minutes to see if he's okay. And if he's struggled with that, then he's clearly not ready and at least the game is done and a sub isn't wasted. Were you to bring him on at the start of the game? These are the business critical decisions that we make around return to play decisions and scenarios, which I think is a really good topic, and I'd love to cover that on the next podcast. Does that sound reasonable to everybody on the podcast here?
Yes, boss.
Yes. Happy to go with that, Johnny.
Fantastic. Right, let's wrap this one up. Twitter handles, Ben.
At Ben Dinnery.
Johnny.
At Johnny_Wilson5.
Splendid. And that is it for this week, ladies and gents. If you enjoyed what you just heard, feel free to subscribe, leave comments, reviews, 5-star please on iTunes. It helps us with our ratings. And that's it for this week. So until next time, bye-bye.